Today's podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, and medical-grade ingredients. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburn, rashes, and other types of skin damage. And the best part is that it's safe and non-toxic, which makes it suitable for use on all skin types and all parts of the body, even with rosacea, eczema, or acne-prone skin. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and ingredients so safe and clean they can be used from the littlest member of your family to the oldest, you now have one simple solution for all your family's skin health needs. I have three kids. We have injuries in our house almost daily, and so it's so nice to have Active Skin Repair to reach for in my cabinet because I know that it's safe, natural, and non-toxic. We use it for things like burns or scrapes or cuts. My youngest daughter recently had a really bad finger injury and we were using it on her and it did not sting or burn her at all. So it was perfect. Today, as a listener of this podcast, you can get a special discount on your order of Active Skin Repair. Visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more, and to get 20% off your order, use code NOONETOLDUS. That's activeskinrepair.com, code NOONETOLDUS for 20% off your order. Welcome to the No One Told Us podcast. Today, I'm so excited to talk with Kiara Smith, who is a practicing occupational therapist, and she's been practicing for over 13 years in both California and Hawaii, working in various settings with infants, toddlers, children, and adolescents with various medical conditions and diagnoses. Realizing the social, emotional, and psychological challenges that pelvic floor dysfunction and toileting differences place on children and families, Kiara decided to narrow her private practice to exclusively treating children and adolescents with pelvic floor dysfunction and toileting challenges. Kiara, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to talk about this because this is a topic that I get so many questions about over on my Instagram page, Hey Sleepy Baby, but I feel like there's also so many people in the parenting space that are giving really out-of-pocket advice about potty training. So I'm always really hesitant to answer those types of questions. And I'm so glad that you're coming on the podcast today to kind of clear some things up, teach us about pelvic floor dysfunction, potty learning, all of these things. And I'm just really excited for you to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Rachel. I am so thrilled to be here in conversation with you.
So tell us a little bit about, I know you mentioned that you kind of noticed that there was a need for this type of specialty, but what got you interested in starting to share this information on Instagram?
That's a great question. So with my background as a pediatric occupational therapist, I have the training with child development and also pelvic health, but the everyday parent has no idea, and they shouldn't because it's not something that is spoken about, or there's not that many resources with a focused approach to pelvic health and potty training and potty learning for children that's grounded in child development and pelvic health and also social emotional learning.
Yeah, exactly. It all ties together. And before we even get into the conversation today, you know, I recently did an episode with Dr. Sarah Reardon of the Vagina Whisperer. And so we talked a little bit about pelvic floor health as far as a woman's body, a mom's body, but can you just explain a little bit about like what the pelvic floor is and why we're looking at this in children, or what some signs of dysfunction would even be?
Yeah. So pelvic floor muscles are a group of muscles that span the pelvis, right? And they have five functions, and these muscles support continence in children. So that's really important. When they're learning sphincter control, that's exactly what potty training, quote unquote, is how can my body as a child hold things in and let them out? Mm. When they're in this phase, they are learning the connections of their internal sensations. So what a full bladder feels like, what a full rectum feels like, and how to open and close the gate, right? Mm-hmm. The gates are the sphincters that allow things out and keep things in. And so we have to make sure that we understand how that typical development works in a child, but also where that sweet spot is in child development, where that physiology lines up with their cognition, with how they're able to understand these concepts of taking care of my body. And that's kind of where I work, is in that space to be able to facilitate that, but also help parents and other caregivers, as well as educators and healthcare professionals, know that this is not just a thing that you do to a child, but it's an actual facilitation of typical development through the lifespan. And if we can do a really good job in that time frame, then we hope that they don't have to see my friend Sarah Reardon when they are an adult. I mean, this is kind of the long-term goal, but really there's not too much out there right now that is showing us as parents and caregivers how to guide our child in a physiologic way and a social emotional way that is encompassing everything that a child needs to be able to do in order to be continent of stool and urine throughout their childhood.
And I think that is where I at least see a lot of the parenting spaces online go left, is they approach potty learning, potty training, like it's, like you said, like it's something that they do to a child and like it's purely behavioral, right? So there's like all these incentives and charts and rewards and things like that. And it's, there's people that might be very knowledgeable in terms of child development, but they don't have that physical piece nailed down, right? So that's kind of where you're filling in the gap, I hope. I send people to your page all the time because that is such an important piece to keep in mind, is that this is a physical process, right?
Yes. Yes. So that physical piece, like I mentioned earlier, is connecting what the sensation of the internal organs are doing, and then having a volitional control over relaxing or contracting. And so that's what the child is learning how to do. How does the neuromuscular system of their body contract and how does it relax? And I'm saying it in a more complex way, but really it's, how do I feel safe enough in order to relax, to let go? And how can I generate enough contraction and muscular strength and endurance to hold while I'm in my car seat till I get home, to be able to go to the potty chair and let all my pee pee out? It's a very complex task when we're breaking it down to all these different steps in order for a child to be successful with potty training and continence. And if you weren't in this space like myself, I would have no idea, right? As a parent, I have a 5-year-old. I would have no idea how to go about this. I would, you know, read blogs, parenting blogs, or go to social media and find someone who's and claims to be an expert and, and try their methods. But really, I was seeing the gap because I was seeing when those things weren't successful, when the child continued to have leaks and accidents, when they were starting to withhold, when they were starting to have pain in their stomach daily, and all these slew of other difficulties that were showing up as impacting function, not only just with toileting, but with sleep, with going to school, with doing extracurricular activities, all these things that are impacted because of this self-care skill, toileting, that the child is not having the correct balance yet with.
So do you find that there is like a perfect age or an ideal age to start the process? Because that's another thing that you see claimed all the time, is that there's like this perfect window. And if you don't make it in that perfect window, you're like doomed, or it's going to be so much harder, or that for a boy, you should start at a certain age, or for a girl, you should start at a separate age. So can you kind of debunk some of that for us?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question always that I get, you know, is there a perfect age? And I will go to the science for that.
Great.
We know Johns Hopkins University has stated sphincter control for children develops more maturely between the ages of 24 and 30 months, meaning that's when it starts to really click in the child's brain and body of how their muscles are closing and opening. So sphincters are muscles, smooth muscle, and how they can volitionally do that. And then that coincides with also cognition. Where are they? Are they able to follow 1 or 2 step directions? You know, are they able to understand cause and effect? These things are happening all at the same time. But if we're trying to, what I call force nature or force development, sometimes that's an uphill battle. If you're expecting an 18-month-old to be 100% continent, meaning that they don't need to use diapers anymore for day or night, and they're able to do it independently, that for me is going against nature and child development, because we know that 24 to 30 months is that good time to introduce, to start getting used to having that sphincter control be more accurate. And then also it's the neurodiversity of children. Every yeah. child is on their own developmental spectrum, right? And so that's something that plays a role in when readiness shows in a child.
Right. I was going to ask about that too. For children that are maybe neurodiverse, it might be a different timeline, and that's okay. So maybe if you're not looking at age, then what are some other signs of readiness that your child might be ready to start kind of gearing up for that process?
Yeah, that's a great question. So being able to get to and from the bathroom environment, being able to feel safe and secure with the topic of going to the bathroom, being in the environment. I mean, these are really important things that I think are often overlooked. So if a child, for an example, is covering their ears, they're screaming, they're shouting when you're bringing them into a bathroom,
yeah,
maybe it's not the best time to start. So how can we get them more exposed to that with a safe strategy? And it's usually through play and co-regulation of yourself as a parent or caregiver in the process. Being able to stay dry during nap times, that mm-hmm. can also be an indicator of readiness. And sometimes overnight, some of the children are, you know, sporadically staying dry. Being able to manage clothing could be another piece of it. And indicating sometimes if the child is verbal and able to communicate that they are wet and need a diaper change. So these are things that I like to call like global right. readiness behaviors that people have seen throughout the years, but it's not an exclusive list. Like okay. if your child is not doing all these, then start or don't start, mm-hmm. whatever it is. It's really child specific.
And if they're showing interest, I know this is maybe not a problem everybody has, but like my middle child, for example, was really interested in using the potty and started wanting, like asking to sit on the potty from the time she was maybe like 14 or 15 months old. And so we didn't potty train or do anything formal until she was closer to 3 because she had to start school. She was about 2.5, but we let her, like, you know, before bath time, she would be naked. We'd sit her on the potty and let her try. And that seemed to be like a really low pressure way to just kind of get comfortable and familiar with it. Is there any harm to doing things like that?
No, I support that 100%. And even if they're not showing interest, you can still bring it out as a mm-hmm. toy and mm-hmm. you play, you do imaginative play, you do role playing with their stuffies and their toys. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people say, well, don't do that because it is causing a confusion association between, you know, the toilet and playing. But for me, I really think we have to show up for our child in a way that's safe and playful, especially yeah. when they're trying to acquire skill. Right. And so if we expose them to it earlier, like your daughter, she was interested. Great. Like, work on those strengths. She's mm-hmm. interested. We're going to play with it, but there's no pressure. Like you said, there's no expectation of now she's showing really good interest in this. We're going to do no diapers next right. week, right? Right. Like it doesn't necessarily work like that. I mean, maybe it would work, but if it didn't work and you were not successful, it's not the end of the world.
Exactly.
And there's a different approach, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's an essential piece of it.
Yeah. And I love what you said about play. And I mean, that's how our kids make sense of their entire world, right? Like they pretend they're eating, they pretend to take care of their baby dolls. They pretend, you know, that's how they make sense of everything in life. It doesn't mean that they're going to be confused and not know how to eat real food just because they're playing restaurant. Yeah. Like that's crazy.
Then can you imagine? Oh my gosh, if you were like, oh my, okay, we're going to take these diapers away and you've never seen this before, but put all your pee and poo in there.
Exactly.
It's like,
what?
I don't know. I don't know yeah. what's going on here.
No, that would not go over well for most kids, I don't think.
No.
And we, yeah, once we actually had to start the process, it was because she was getting ready for school and they were actually super supportive of whether or not she was still going to be in diapers. But we just figured this might like help her with some independence at school if she can at least pee while she's there. And I know a lot of parents worry about this because some schools are really strict about not taking your child until they're fully toilet trained. So what would you recommend in that situation? Like if they have to do something a little bit more quickly, and less gradual, less gentle, maybe less developmentally appropriate? I mean, if there's really no other choice, like what should they do?
Yeah, if there's really no other choice, I say take my potty training, potty learning course from Tinyhood, because that'll give you fast track and a step-by-step guide to get on it, right?
Okay, amazing. I'll get the link from you for that so I can share it with people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wonderful resource because it really gives you that step-by-step guide and it holds your hand throughout the whole process, but it's very firmly rooted in child development and pelvic health for children, which is very different than some of the other methods. Right. I will say this is very common and I am appalled that it happens it breaks my heart every time that I hear this.
I know.
Like going back to what I said earlier about forcing development, our education system can do a better job in understanding these nuances of the physiology of children and self-care skills such as toileting.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, but like this social media platform is a wonderful way to get that education out there. Mm-hmm. And these things that the parents and child have to go through when the potty learning and potty training journey is kind of forced and abrupt can lead to some of the challenges that I see in my practice, right? It's the constipation. It's the withholding urine and stool causing UTIs and impaction. It's causing, you know, behavioral difficulties, self-regulation issues, and all the slew of different things that can happen when children don't feel safe in their bodies or in their environments that are supposed to be caring for them.
Yeah.
And that's a piece of my work too, is to really focus on that trauma sensitive and trauma informed approach, because little traumas that people think, oh, it's no big deal that the automatic flush went off on you, like you didn't get hurt, that embeds in a child's body thinking every time I have this feeling in my body and I have to go take myself to the bathroom, this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it embeds in their body and they, you know, remember that. And then they start to withhold. Or they start to go in their pants, you know? So there's all these little complexities within toileting that need to be uncovered and shared with more people.
Yeah. And I think parents are often left wondering, because this stuff isn't really openly talked about. So parents are going through something like that, thinking there's something wrong with their kid. They're the only one in the world. And like, where do you even go for help? And I think most people would probably go to their pediatrician, which is maybe a great first step, but that person's not going to have the specialized training like someone like you has, or, you know, the pediatrician just also doesn't have the bandwidth to like talk through these issues and really come up with a plan, right?
I'm always looking for screen-free options to entertain my kids, especially my oldest, when we have long car rides or things like that. And something that I really love using with him are podcasts. And there's a really cute new podcast called Mysteries About True Histories, which the acronym is MATH, M-A-T-H. And it's from the creators of the hit podcast Who Smarted and Netflix Brainchild. And it's all about the adventurous world of mysteries about true histories. And it follows these two characters, Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers. And they're on adventures through time, packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and it's really funny, which makes learning kind of cool. And it's perfect for ages 6 and up. So new episodes drop every Thursday, each stacked with so much laughter your kids won't even realize how much they're actually learning. And my oldest is about 6.5 and he loves stuff like this. So it's a great new podcast to introduce to your kids. The episodes are really short, like 15 to 20 minutes. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your older kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Now, if you know me, you know that I love to cook and I love creating healthy meals for my family. But even more than that, I love things that are easy and convenient. And even though I love to cook dinner for my kids, sometimes for things like lunches or if I'm just going to be working at night and need something easy for myself to grab, I love Factor's meals. And especially now in the spring and summertime where we've got more plans, we're busier, we're outside, we're going out and doing things more, having Factor meals in my fridge is such a game changer because they're healthy, they're zero prep, and they're so fresh and delicious. Factor's fresh and never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes right from your microwave. So no matter how busy you are, you always have time to enjoy nutritious and great tasting meals. And when I tell you they are actually delicious, I 100% recommend these. My mom even recently asked me, are they really good? I heard you talking about them on your podcast, but are you really saying that you like them? And I said, yes, you have to order them. They are actually so, so yummy. So what are you waiting for? There are 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons you can choose from each week. So you always have new flavors to explore. You'll never get bored with the same old meals. They truly taste like restaurant quality, so you don't feel like you're depriving yourself of anything. It actually feels like you're fueling up your body with delicious food that is real and super, super nutrient dense. So you can enjoy this effortless support to your lifestyle, choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage whatever goals you have, and simply just eat well-balanced, delicious, easy food. Head to factormeals.com/nooneToldUs50 and use code nooneToldUs50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. So this is an amazing deal. That's code nooneToldUs50 at factormeals.com/nooneToldUs50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% of your next month while your subscription is active. And feel free to send me a message and ask me for my favorite meals, because I love talking about them and I'll be happy to help you choose.
So what would be some signs of some like dysfunction that somebody might see an OT like yourself for? So you mentioned withholding. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I know that actually came up in my question box that I put up on Instagram just the other day, that they weren't starting to potty train quite yet. The child was newly two, but was like really just not wanting to poop at all, like even in the diaper.
Yeah, that happens often. And the trigger is usually unknown if parents have ruled out constipation. So sometimes a kiddo will have one painful poop and they'll think that it's going to happen again. So they hold and they don't want to go again. But if the child is still in diapers and they're doing this, parents really get really overwhelmed. Like, what else do I do? The first line treatment is usually going to the pediatrician and the pediatrician prescribing medication to help with the constipation. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily, though, going to break the behavior of the child being scared. And so sometimes parents come to me to figure out strategies that are going to help for that child. So it might be through the play, talking through it, using Play-Doh, showing poop go into a diaper with that a doll has, and talking about how it's safe. Also the use of language. How is the parent communicating these difficulties with the child? Are they really triggered in their body? Or is their nervous system really overwhelmed and dysregulated? Because that has an impact on their child. Humans have this capacity for co-regulation. Their nervous system is attracted and attached to those people closest to them, their caregivers, their support system. And really sensitive children have an even heightened state of that. So they are really sensitive to those differences in emotion and feelings. Mm-hmm. And so if a parent is really nervous, of course, because it has to do with the health of my child, I am overwhelmed, anxious, worried, then that child is going to feel it. So I really like to look at the parent and help them regulate themselves and then walk through the strategies. But noticing, Kiara, I notice that you kept your poop in your body yesterday. The poop has to come out, and it's safe to let it out in your diaper, right? There's no expectation of it at this point because going into the toilet because they're not potty trained. Mm-hmm. But telling them that it's safe and that it is always good to help your body, and bringing in the toys that they love and talking about that, or pets at home, siblings, etc. So it normalizes that feeling, even for yourself. Sometimes mommy wants to keep my poop in, but I know I have to let it out. And I'm giving you this water. I'm giving you this fruit to help that poop come out, right? At that point, if you're giving certain external, what I like to call supports, that could be the medication, that could be nutrition, hydration, things to help keep stool soft, because we want stool soft so it doesn't hurt when it comes out.
Right.
Sometimes parents will need to get a stimulant laxative to help break through the withholding for children, or use the bottom-up approach, which is suppositories or enemas. So those are things that are other strategies that can be utilized for children who are withholding. Okay. But it's really figuring out what does their nervous system need at this moment and finding what that is.
Yeah, that's so key. And I'm so glad you talked about the parent piece. And it's not like from a blame place at all. But I talk about this with sleep all the time, like parents who are struggling at bedtime. One of the first things I want to look at is, how are you presenting at bedtime? Like, are you super stressed and anxious or distracted or, you know, getting angry? Like, those things are just not going to work in your favor at all. So that is such a key piece.
Yeah. I love that you say it about the blame. Like, it's not about a blame thing. It's definitely just bringing awareness to it.
Yeah, bringing awareness to how much we affect them and how much they are just like little sponges. And especially, like you mentioned, the kids that are a little bit more sensitive in temperament, or that, you know, might be a little bit, you know, might be neurodiverse or things like that. They might be even extra perceptive to things like that. You mentioned some foods that could help. So I know sometimes parents, you know, maybe you're waiting to get into the pediatrician and they can't see you till next week. Like, what are some things you can do at home to maybe help with that as far as foods, nutritional supports, hydration, things like that?
Yeah, nutritional supports are huge. Hydration is huge. Little sips of water, or if you make your own, I love having my own electrolyte mixture that I even make for my daughter at home, but I provide that recipe to my clients. But that is going to be key, like I said, to help move things along and keep things soft. The pea fruits, right? So that those pears, peaches, prunes, those are all really great to provide to help with gut motility, making sure that we're supporting the gut microbiome. So having, you know, pre and probiotics as a support, if that is within the nutritional kind of realm of your child's diet, that could be really helpful. To increase hydration throughout the day can be really challenging for children, especially kids that are not in our care throughout the day. They're at school or daycare. So getting the daycare or school system on board for having them have a water bottle accessible is something I recommend to my clients. And then we have a water station at home. So there's a little space where everyone keeps their water bottles, and every hour we take a sip of it. So making it fun, getting little glasses, right? You have like a little shot glass size one, and maybe you have a little tumbler size one. And then you can make flavored drinks with, you know, ice cubes with different fruits in it to make it interesting. But that hydration piece is really good, not only for digestion, but also brain health. How is the brain working? Most of us are dehydrated. We're just in a dehydrated state.
I'm going to take a sip of my water as you're talking. I'm like, I'm probably so dehydrated and dried out right now.
Yeah. So it's definitely something that everyone can work on, but especially kiddos who are struggling. I will also say tracking body patterns. So making sure that you know when your child is voiding urine or stool throughout the day can be really helpful because you can help facilitate. Oh, I know that after snack time, Kiara tends to go behind the curtain and like sit down and squat to let a poop out. That's what she did last week. So I'm going to go 5 or 10 minutes before and talk to her about how she can help her body, get some water, say that I'm there for her, and that's it. And then move on, right? So it's always that constant connection. So it's connection over compliance. Like, I'm going to connect with my child and give them some strategies, and then I'm going to leave it and have them choose versus force and comply with what I need you to do right now, because that's not going to happen.
No, I love that so much. And you hit the nail on the head with like, when your toddler goes behind the curtain, it's like they always want to go hide somewhere, right? What are some signs that your child might be constipated? Because like when I was a new mom, my oldest was this way. Like he would go days, sometimes up to a week without pooping. And I thought it was normal. Like people would tell me, oh, breastfed babies don't have to poop every day. Like you hear all these different things from all these different people and you don't really know what to believe. So what would true constipation be? Like, should a child be pooping every single day?
Yeah. So the child should be pooping at least every single day or every other day because we need to empty the rectum. Mm-hmm. So if the child is not emptying their rectum, they continue to eat food and digestion happens and it can get piled up and stretch the smooth tissue out of the rectum to a diameter that starts to not feel the urge of having to go to the bathroom. So if we are not pooping every day, this is building up toxins in our body as well, but it can cause fecal leaks and it can cause smears. The constipation carousel is this constant, you know, thing that you are just chasing. You're chasing the poop coming out. You're trying to prevent it from staying in. And these kids really have this difficulty. And so constipation is having the Rome criteria has outlined that functional constipation is having less than one bowel movement a day. Less than one bowel movement a day for more than 3 days. So if your child is not pooping for that long, then they're functionally constipated. Another thing is that there's hard stools that are dried out that are painful. Mm. The child is straining is another piece of the diagnostic criteria for constipation. And this is really difficult because usually the first line is going to your pediatrician and they say like, oh, breastfed baby, it's fine. And they kind of send you on your way. But there really should be more talk about how to help manage that at home. So a lot of abdominal massage, looking at diet and nutrition if the child is on solids, but even if the child is exclusively breastfed or formula fed, you know, what are the ingredients in that formula? What is mom eating that could be affecting gut motility? Mm. So kids don't necessarily have to be allergic to a certain food, but they could be sensitive. And right. that affects inflammation in the gut and can cause slowing down of digestion, which causes constipation. So all these little nuanced things that we can be detectives about to help facilitate prevention of constipation and management is really helpful. Also, kids can have difficulties with constipation if they're withholding, obviously, right. because they're not letting enough out. I will tell you, a crazy thing that just came out in the research was that children who were stooling, who were pooping every single day, type 4 on the Bristol stool scale. If I had a little picture diagram, I would show you what it looked like. But it's that smooth sausage type of poop. You've seen it before, smooth with no cracks and, you know, just very nicely shaped. Those stools, kids have those every day, type 4 without a problem, could still be constipated.
Really?
Like, are you kidding me? What? I said, yes, they still could be because they're not fully emptying their rectum. So they're letting out what seems to be like a good amount, but actually, there could be still some stuck above in the descending colon that hasn't come out yet that can still cause stretching of the rectum over time. So those are like the tricky cases.
But wow. So if your child,
crazy. So parents are like, then what do I do? How do I
right?
know?
What do you do? Do you just encourage them to like sit on the potty for a couple minutes before they tell you they're done just to make sure? Or like, what should you do?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would preface that also by saying that there has to be symptoms associated with it too. So things okay. like daytime urinary incontinence. Yeah. I don't want everyone to like freak out and be like, oh no, I have to go like make sure my kid is like pooping multiple times a day. I guess like,
right.
I don't know, but yeah. So there has to be associated symptoms with it. Like they're having some leaks at night or they might have some skid marks sometimes, but yeah, that's, the outlier is like those kids who are pooping good, smooth, soft sausages every day, and they're having just little bits of random symptoms happening.
Okay. Interesting. That's really good to know.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about poop for a while, but you just mentioned like incontinence with pee during the day. So I'd love to ask you about that because this is also something that I feel like I never knew about. And I feel like I still don't really know what's normal or what I should be expecting. When should kids be like totally nighttime potty trained? Like when can you stop wearing pull-ups or are pull-ups not good to use because they get used to them? Like what should we be encouraging or expecting as far as nighttime dryness?
Yeah, this is an unpopular opinion that I have that people are like, how could you say this?
Lay it on
us.
It's
a lot
okay.
of things I say. Yeah, like I think a lot of people have that feeling about some of the things I say. But in my experience, I'm not anti pull-ups because of the physiology and the medical reasons behind continence at nighttime. So okay. for continence, we're talking about how the sequence of it happens in childhood. First, a child is supposed to be able to stay dry during the day, right? And then for pee and for poop. And then at nighttime, they're supposed to be staying dry between the ages of 4 and 5 years old. Okay. So people are like, what do you mean? 4 and 5 years old is the time when their hormone that their body produces starts to decrease the production of urine overnight. So this hormone happens to be increased during those ages.
Okay.
So before those ages, that hormone isn't necessarily secreting at a efficient rate to make sure that the kidneys don't produce urine overnight.
Got it.
We're always producing urine, but during the nighttime, it's when it's supposed to just chill and calm down between mm-hmm. the ages of 4 and 5. So you would expect a child to wet until that age. If they're past that age and they're not having any other symptoms and still they're bedwetting, there could be a reason why or reasons why this is continuing to happen. So if your child has gone through the potty learning stage for over a year and say that they're 4 years old and they're still wetting, I wouldn't necessarily be too concerned because they're not 5 yet. Mm-hmm. So I give a little buffer, but I keep an eye on it. And what I mean by keep an eye on it is we know that number one cause of bedwetting is typically constipation that's missed. Meaning the rectum starts to fill with stool overnight. It presses on the bladder and it makes the bladder irritated. The bladder squeezes and relaxes and then you have bedwetting.
Oh, okay.
So that's usually the number one cause past the age of 5 if a child has undergone potty training, potty learning already.
Okay.
There are other issues that could happen why the child continues to have bedwetting past that age. Number two could be sleep disordered breathing.
Yeah.
So they have a sleep apnea, sleep obstruction, tethered oral tissues, tongue tie, lip tie. And then they can also have overactive bladder based on how their day habits are, meaning that they don't necessarily empty out their bladder fully during the day. They have residual urine left in the bladder overnight. It irritates the inner lining of the bladder and it makes the muscle spasm. Mm. So that could cause bedwetting, and that is usually managed by medication, by a pediatric urologist.
Okay.
Lynn, this time of year, parenting can be such a flusterclux.
You've come to the right place. I'm Lynn Lyons, and I've been treating anxious families for over 30 years.
I'm Lynn's sister-in-law and co-host Robin Hudson.
Join us for Flusterclux, a podcast for parents who worry.
Wait, that's everybody.
Yeah, these last few years have felt like one long anxiety attack for so many.
Why do you think parents are always surprised that a podcast about anxiety relates to them, even if no one in their house has an anxiety disorder?
Well, worry is human. Everyone does it. And anxiety shows up when we face uncertainty.
All the parenting tips you've taught me have been essential.
I love to break it down into skills we need to manage worry in our families.
We've covered so many topics: depression, burnout, meltdowns, perfectionism.
Don't forget scary mothers-in-law.
Right, but of course that's not my mother-in-law.
Because that's my mother.
And a listener.
As a psychotherapist, I like to teach parents and kids how to respond to everyday moments in healthy ways.
Managing anxiety really can be taught.
It really can. And I'll even tell you what to say.
We talk about serious stuff, but without being too serious.
Anxiety wants everything serious. Anxiety doesn't stand a chance when we're laughing, even about the tough stuff.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
And so if a child is past the age of 5, they're still wetting the bed, what would be like a first stop for the parent? Would it be someone specialized like an OT like yourself or the pediatrician, or where would you recommend they go first? Or do they just wait it out?
Yeah, that's a great question because they're 5. They're on kind of that cusp, right? I would say seek someone out if they're also having daytime issues,
okay,
meaning they have some leaks when they're like playing soccer or maybe when they're really engrossed in watching a movie. Sometimes they leak in their undies because that is another kind of pink flag, I like to call it, on we need to delve more into, are they having like issues with sphincter control? Are they having issues with their pelvic floor? Are they having difficulties with urge sensation, like that interoceptive awareness, that sensory mm-hmm. system is not giving them a strong enough signal for them to act? So there's more investigation that I need to do during that daytime period. But if they're just having nighttime and they're pooping great and there's no leaks during the day, I would just watch it until they are maybe 5.5, 6. And then if it gets worse, meaning that before it was like once a week, but now it's every night, Kiara, and it's soaking through the sheets, then I would say, we need to rule out constipation for this kiddo. And that okay. age is the same age as when they go to kinder.
Yeah.
So that's when I would be like,
there might be increased curious. Stress, things like that.
Yeah. And withholding during the school day.
Yeah.
So if they're withholding pee and poop, this can affect nighttime habits.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So how would you approach an older child who maybe is going through some periods of bedwetting or it's coming up all of a sudden, they've kind of regressed at night? I mean, I know you care so much about like being super sensitive to their emotions and, yeah. and being trauma informed. How do you kind of manage this without having to change your bedding every single day, like maybe suggesting yeah. a pull up or something without completely like humiliating them and wrecking their confidence?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I deal with it a lot, right? So those kids that are in that 8 to 12 year old range
yeah.
is the time when it can be quite challenging. I mean, every age, to be honest, is difficult for them because it has so many impacts on their social emotional well-being. It impacts their social relationships. It impacts their self-confidence and self-worth. And so in this time, this age range, I'm very careful on how I help kids their age.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to hear from someone other than their parent or caregiver about toileting and their body in this age range is really helpful because they have probably gone a few years with hearing the same thing over and over and over from multiple people in their family and educators. And I want to be the person who says, I see you, I hear you, and I'm going to help you because I've helped other 9-year-olds with just some of those difficulties that you're coming to me with. And everything that you tell me here is between you, me, and your parents. And I have Nellie. So Nellie is my facility dog. So she provides animal assisted interventions. And so Nellie cool. here, yeah, is here to help you. And my goal really is to help you achieve your goals. And you told me you want clean, dry underwear so you could do sleepovers or sleepaway camp and not have to worry about it. And I know that I can help you with that, but we have to work as a team. So my approach is really collaborative with the child and then also giving them the education about why their body is doing this, like how I just explained it to you, like how this can happen, how the bladder can misbehave at night,
yeah.
and what are the things that you can do in order to help it. So it's really empowering the child by giving them education about their body and helping them create good body autonomy and responsibility. And once they believe in that, and once they have a provider who hears them and sees them and listens to them and works with them in order to achieve their goals, it's another kid that I see at the end of our time together. And it's just so fulfilling because they feel alone. They feel like they're always going to have to deal with this. And it doesn't have to be this way.
I love that so much. It sounds like you are just like a dream provider. So if someone can't work with you directly, who do you recommend they seek out if they're dealing with any of these issues that we've been talking about? Like what should they look for? Because I know, you know, you are an OT, but OTs have all different types of specialties. So what would somebody maybe want to like Google or research?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question too. It's really looking at a pediatric pelvic health therapist. So okay. I'm an OT, that's my background, but the other therapists that work in this space are physical therapists as well as physiotherapists. So okay. I know you probably have some international folks listening to you. Those are the people that I would seek out. And it's important that these providers know how to work with children because children are not mini adults. So sometimes the parent will say, well, there is a pelvic floor therapist in my area. And they said they can see kids. They'll try. I'm like, well, that's not necessarily going to be helpful. It doesn't translate, right, as seamlessly as we would think. So really making sure that who you are bringing your child to is someone who understands child development and who understands the background of pelvic floor disorders in children, because it is very we need a biopsychosocial approach. We need to look at the whole person, the whole context, how this child navigates their life. They're at home, they're at school, they're at soccer, they're with Nana, they're with, you know, their teacher. And how do those relationships integrate to be able to facilitate or hinder a child's capacity to take care of themselves in a way that's independent and that is across all environments? So
absolutely.
I would urge them to do that, to look up someone who definitely has worked with children in the past. Because if you do bring your child to a pelvic floor specialist that does not work with children, you can actually cause more trauma than not, right? So that would be my first suggestion is to do that. And also to work with a developmental psychologist who is trained in elimination disorders, meaning that they help facilitate work around anxiety management and fear and trauma with toileting. That's another challenging piece. There needs to be more providers out there in the world. Putting a plug out there, come on, therapist, to join me in this you know, space, because there are too many kids and not enough therapists.
Right. And it sounds like such fulfilling work. Like you can really just change a kid's whole trajectory if you help them with this, you know, with their confidence and all of that early on. Kiara, thank you so much.
And this family. Episode,
yes, absolutely. This episode has been so eye-opening and so helpful. I know it's going to help so many people to help their kids. So I appreciate you so much. The last question I have for you, because I know you're also a mom, is what do you feel like you wish you knew before you became a mom? What do you feel like no one really tells you? It can be pelvic health related or not. It could be something totally different.
Oh my goodness. That's a really hard question because
there are so many things.
Oh, I should be fine. Yeah, there's so many things. That's why. But I was like, you know, I work with children all the time. I've been working with them for so long. Like, I think I have some good skills. And that is a total lie, because when it's your child, it's so different. Yeah. It is so different. There's just a different dynamic. And the skills that I practice day in and day out in my job, working in a children's hospital with feeding, with fine motor skills, with pelvic health, it all goes out the window when it's your own kid.
Yeah.
But I will say those things have definitely been helpful for me to help facilitate, you know, helping my child along that developmental journey. And I have to check myself every day about how am I responding and how is my co-regulation with my own child. And it really is practice what you preach, and you don't have to be perfect about it by any means. But if we have the intentionality behind, hey, you know, 80% of the time, I'm going to put in some good effort, and 20% of the time, I'm going to be a human being, I think we are loving and providing our child with the best parent and caregiver that they deserve. So yeah, I think that's what I would say.
I love that. Yeah, that resonates with me so much, because I was a former teacher and I thought I had everything figured out before I had a kid. And it's they really do humble you, don't they?
Yeah, totally. And like, I have one, and I'm only going to have one. So I just, hats off to every parent caregiver out there with one or multiple children. It's the hardest work, but the, you know, they always say the hardest work, but the most fulfilling. And that can't be true enough.
It's so true. I know. Thank you so much for joining. Where can people find your Instagram page and your amazing resources and your course and all of that stuff?
Yeah. So people can find me on Instagram at Aloha Integrative Therapy. That's the name of my private practice. And you can also find my potty training, potty learning course. It's a self-paced course for parents and caregivers on supporting children through the potty journey. And that's on the website. You can find it on tinyhood.com. Okay. And then for therapists who are listening out there, all you therapists, OTs, PTs, and physios, I have a course called A Holistic and Integrative Approach to Pediatric Pelvic Health that you can learn about how to treat the kiddos and families in your community and do the work that I do with my approach to care.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I know that there are lots of therapists and OTs that listen, so that's super helpful and exciting. I love that you're doing that further education and training. That's so great.
Yeah, it's so needed.
It really is. Okay, well, thank you so much. I'm going to put all of that in the show notes, and it was great talking to you. I'll chat with you again soon.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.